Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to Books Boys, live from the Grand Library, the Dean and EJ.
Guys, keep calm and read your Dickens. EJ, we're using the Anna Karenina method here. He's PJ.
Hello there.
I'm the Dean, and we are the Books Boys.
The one and only.
This is the Books Boys show. Get it? Buy it? Books. My Books Boys t-shirt on?
Oh, yeah. Books.
Remember Little Alfred? We're talking about the Christmas mysterious edition. Item. Christmas edition Alfred.
Oh, he's back. I kind of got the impression he left for the Bahamas was a big stack of money when he came back. That's the impression I was getting last time.
It's home for the holidays.
He's back. He hasn't swindled us. That's good. So yeah, books. I'm in the library once again in Dresden. I was here in the summer, back again now in Dresden for a job for a month or two, and I'm in the library. I'm spending a lot of time in this mysterious building called the library. Biblioteca. And I'm literally giving this once again the radio show in the library, so you can imagine all the annoyed students around me trying to study their Latin grammar.
It's good because we say in the intro live from the Grand Library, and I think we're contractually obligated to at least once a year actually be in a library.
Yeah, I take the responsibility this time, this year. Maybe you next year. And I've been searching for the meaning and for the definition of the so-called books, because I have heard that a library keeps libros, which are books, hence in the name library.
I heard that.
Yet I am confused because all I see are colorful toilet paper rolls.
Interesting. So, interesting.
Yeah. I'm still very confused.
Oh, hold on. PJ, we're just at the beginning of the show, but I think we're maybe already receiving a call. So we're off to an interesting start. I think we got a call coming in. Hello, you're through to Books Boys. Yeah. You've got Dean and PJ on the line. Who's calling?
This is can you hear me?
We can hear you. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, this is.
We can hear you. Crystal clear.
Sorry. This is Jay Reader Archuleta calling.
Ah, brilliant. We were actually, I was just about to talk about your book, The Best Good Horse. I've been reading. It was the first book I read this month. And a very interesting book of short stories it is. Jay Reader Archuleta, how are you doing? How are you doing today?
Doing good. Got this Zoom thing hooked up. I'm not sure I've got it right, but I can hear you and I can see you. So I guess
sounds like it's going well then.
Yeah.
It's going well. It's going very well.
Good. So I wanted to ask you, so I read your book of short stories here. I'm always interested when someone writes, in particular when they do short stories, because you've got a range of different themes and topics. What got you into writing? You know, what made you want to sit down and write these stories?
Good question.
I suppose it's my background, growing up in far west Texas, on working on ranches and farms, kind of a lone life in that regard as a young man. But I was we didn't have any TV, radio, or anything like that. So the older fellows would tell stories, and so I got hooked on storytelling. And some of them were much better than others, and the ones that were good at telling stories, you could just sit there at night with in very primitive accommodations, and close your eyes and actually live the stories through their telling. And I thought that always impressed me. So I guess when it comes to storytelling, that's pretty much basically what got me interested in storytelling.
Okay. And so, I mean, it's interesting because reading through these are stories that you can feel that you're in, you know, and I really think about the characters and I love them. I want to ask you, I usually ask this later in the interview, but I'm interested in asking you a little bit earlier. Now that we've got, this amazing collection of stories, what is next for yourself? Do you plan on putting out another batch, or was it just a one and done? You had a few stories you wanted to kind of take from the heart, and that's you.
Oh, actually, no. My first attempt, book was published was a novel. I had always wanted to do a police procedural, so I set it in early 1900s in Arizona, central character being an Arizona Ranger. And so that was my first novel. It's called Real Sonora. And then so I had written a bunch of short stories, and I had stacks of them. And I knew this fellow who was a writer and had been successfully published, actually sold several to screenwriters. And he encouraged me to get the short stories published. So the first batch was published in a book called The El Paso Red Flame Gas Station. And it was very well received by the critics. And so that encouraged me. And I already had another stack of short stories. I was writing at the time for myself, basically. And so I had another stack of short stories, which ended up being The Best Good Horse. So that's a way of background.
Okay, so we've had a first batch already. And what's next then? More stories, or are you going to have a go at another novel? What are you thinking?
Yes, I'm doing a sequel to Real Sonora and also short stories. I like short stories better than novels. I take greater pleasure out of writing short stories. I guess it's because I've got what they would call attention deficit disorder, but I like the idea of writing it quick, making it succinct, and then getting on with life.
Sure. Yeah. Get it in, out, story done, and go live your life. Yeah. So go ahead.
I was just saying, a lot of the celebrated short story writers, Somerset Maugham or Frank O'Connor, I think they have a similar kind of view on it, that they just want to tell a story quite precisely. And go on like Tolstoy, who we always go on about Anna Karenina, just to tell the story, and then be quite scarce or very frugal with your words, economic. So I do like the concept of a short story as well, more than I would of a very loquacious novel.
Mm-hmm. We have. I'm going to give a few examples of the stories, and in particular, a couple. We try to do spoiler free, but I'll just kind of introduce a couple of them that I particularly liked. So if we go even to the beginning, we have the story about Al's brother, and that one is called A Prayer to St. Michael, Saint Michel, I guess. Interestingly, I love this one. So there was a chap in the town called Al, and once he dies, his ranch gets left to his brother, and the town initially don't really take to him. They just kind of call him Al's brother. But eventually we get this really nice line. Al's brother did have a name, several in fact. And one of his names is Adam, and it turns out that maybe Adam's a code name. So actually he's been doing a bit of military type work, and actually he is not no identity, as the townsfolk almost think, but several, which is quite interesting. And he has a nice story. Well, it's a sad story in a way, but he finds a human ship as he's driving along, and there's a poor girl there who he takes to a Marie Claire to look after. And she makes a prayer to St. Michael, and that's where that story comes from. But I just wanted to give that as an example. There's some sadness in the stories, but they do deal with kind of realistic situations, and they deal with real people. or you know, what seem like, I suppose, real people. And that got me to want to ask you, you know, are any of these based on real, you know, circumstances that you've come across, or are they just totally, totally fictional?
No, I'm not clever enough to make a lot of things up. So I have to write about what I know. And all of these stories are, as you say, about normal people. And because that's how I grew up. That's my life experience. People on the street, nothing exceptional. You wouldn't recognize them, or you wouldn't know who they were if you were standing in line with them at the grocery store. But the experiences of that life hands you, and how you handle those experiences, is what I wanted to write about. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you like Prayer to St. Michael, because that's one of the projects that I have as a, I use that, the short story, as a prequel to a short novel that I have in mind. So that's one of the projects I'm going to start. I'm going to continue that story, because it's basically, he was doing OS, what they call OSS work, out of England in France during World War II. And that's the background between he and the sister. So, but all of these stories are like that. And I'm glad you picked up on that, because that's all I can do. So all of the stories in the book, in my novel, and in my other book of short stories, are based on what I have seen of life. And the characters, I think there's one theme that I tried to implant in the stories as I went along, and that's that all of the characters have been kicked around by life. Mm-hmm. They've been battered and beat up, but they've never been defeated, at least not in their own mind. They never admit defeat. And that's what I tried to point out, is they're not victims. They would never consider themselves as victims. They see the setbacks that they've had as temporary setbacks, no more. And they continue on to try to solve their problem, or rectify their situation, as it were. So that's I think you hit it when you're talking about normal people. There's nothing spectacular. They're not overly educated. They have no super wealth or superpowers. They're just people trying to get through life.
Yeah, and as you say, they've been kicked around a bit. Most of them are dealing with some kind of struggle. And I think that's what gives you that, you know, connection, that emotional kind of connection, or a bit of empathy, or you're rooting for them a little bit. You know, you want to see them do well, because they haven't all started out with the easiest beginning sometimes.
Yes, yes. I don't know if you're recording this, and if you can edit it, because I don't want to sound like I'm blowing smoke, but I've listened to several of your podcasts. I'm an old guy, so I would call them broadcasts. But what I really enjoy about you fellows is your interest in reading, and how you encourage others to read, and the way you dissect the various stories. I listened to one in particular. You had, I guess, a colleague of yours call in, and it was George Orwell's 1984.
Yes.
And I happen to be an Orwell fan, and Eric Blair was his real name, of course. But to get to that, if you read two of his other efforts, Homage to Catalonia and Down and Out in London and Down and Out in Paris, you get a real sense of where he came from and what he was trying to do. But anyway, I'm going off on a tangent. Sorry, guys. I don't want to waste. Oh,
no. Hey, we never say no to an Orwell sidetrack, you know?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. He's always worth mentioning.
What? No, I'm glad you enjoyed an evening class, like a kind of correspondence course or whatever you'd call it, on Orwell. I love the guy.
And I always say to people who are you know, who want to maybe understand society's darker manipulative side, do read 1984 and A Brave New World, so you can, you know, get some insight for yourself. You don't have to believe anything, but it's just
yeah. So for anyone listening, that's Orwell's 1984 and Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. Often get paired together, but they're both very dystopian, yeah, but in different ways, you know.
Yes, indeed, yeah.
But just to kind of touch on a couple other things that I really liked in these stories, I love the story of Ace and Pearl. And again, I'm not going to spoil the ending, but there's one particular line I love, which is a slight spoiler, but they're working in the cafe, and Ace originally had some other businesses with horses and things. And once that's wrapped up, the two of them just say, let's get this cafe, you know, let's turn it around, let's get it working. And he says, things are going reasonably well until the night he shot Pearl. I said, oh, wow, okay, I was not expecting that. And and let's see where the story takes us. And then it is the story of the difficulties that he goes through, and, you know, and then he stashes some money, and I'm not going to say what becomes of that. But it's nice to, because you're almost thinking, well, he's got this fail-safe, and then when things, you're not sure if things are going to work out the way he hoped they did, it's nice, but that line really got me, like, because I wasn't expecting him to shoot her, you know? And it's like, right, the story is going a totally different direction than I thought, and then it kind of gathers pace from there a little bit, and you just kind of, you want to root for him because he's having things tough, but he also did shoot her, so it's also difficult to root for him. So they gave me some moral dilemmas at times as well, you know?
Yes, yeah, Ace started off life pretty well. He was a hardworking guy, went to work in the oil fields in West Texas. And then when he started into his quarter horse raising business, he found an easier way to make a living, which was on the criminal side. Mm-hmm. And he seemed to have that weakness in him, a lack of strength of character, I suppose, where he preferred to make his living that way. And so he turned, maybe didn't turn, maybe he always had it in him, but throughout it all, even though he did the deed of shooting Pearl, he wasn't that far off center. He was I always was fairly sympathetic to him as a character, because I've known people like that, and rascals they may be, but you still can't help but like them in a way.
Yeah, that's the thing. And the guy I like the most is the guy Josh. So Josh has this kind of sad, not, well, I don't want to say sad, because things do go okay for him in the end. But he has this story where he's done a little bit of work, you know, and he's saved up some money, and off he goes to another town. And he gets picked up by the cops, and they think he's a vagrant, or, you know, they're not really sure what's going on with him and why, you know, why has this guy got a big packet of money in his pocket kind of thing. So they take him into jail and question him and whatever else. And he's done absolutely nothing wrong. He's innocent almost to the point of a touch of naivety about it, you know, and he just goes along with what they're doing. And eventually the judge says, yeah, he's done nothing wrong. His story checks out. We're going to make him pay the cost of being in court out of his hard-earned wages, and let him go. And then the poor guy gets picked up a second time because he falls in with this girl, and he thinks, well, she's very pretty, I'll go along with her. And then it turns out that she's a criminal type, and he was actually in grave danger. And again, I'm not going to spoil how it ends, but I felt he's the one I liked the most out of all the stories, because he was just very pure, very naive, just going along with things and not realizing that everyone else is necessarily above board, you know?
Well, let me say this about Josh. If you like Josh, the book of short stories that I have is called The El Paso Red Flame Gas Station. It's a what is the word they call it, a coming of age, buildings Roman, and Josh is the central character in all the stories. And I trace Josh from when he was just a very small boy till the time he becomes a young man. So that's Josh is basically the star of the El Paso Red Flame Gas Station. I'll be happy to get a copy of that to you guys.
Oh yes, please.
Happy to send
sounds
you
very interesting. Yeah. We'd love that. And, yes, please.
And but Josh, his, I love the way you grabbed onto that naivete because that is exactly what he was. I what he was doing is what we used to call follow the harvest. And he's about 16, which is about the same age I was when I followed the harvest. And I what you do is you go throughout Texas based on the seasons. The growing seasons and when the harvest would come to be where you could harvest the crop. And I had to get back to far west Texas where I was raised and living. And I had, you work all summer and they pay you off at the end. And so I had a little grip filled with cash. And riding the bus back. So that story there is a little bit of my imagination based on my experience of riding home on a bus with being naive, halfway scared to death because I've got one pair of jeans and a work shirt in my little grip, and underneath it I have the cash hidden, and I'm a little paranoid that people could actually see that I have this bag full of, it's only a couple of hundred dollars, but to me it was the world.
Wow. For some reason reminds me of have you ever read John Williams' Butcher's Crossing, the author from Stoner? Have you heard of him?
No, I've heard of him. I haven't read him. Let me write that down. I will.
Yeah, go ahead. I mean, his book was republished and Stoner became famous just as a republished book. But Butcher's Crossing is really good Western, where I don't know much about that side of America at all, but that was set in the 1870s, I think, and it's about them trying to make money, I think it's oxes, might be a different animal, trying to find them and get the fur and sell it, but it's actually about them being out of time. It's not popular anymore, finding that certain cattle. And it sounds a bit like you just trying to work all summer, all winter, and then just for one single batch of cash, and really that anxiety is in the novel the whole time.
Yeah, sounds interesting. I'll follow up.
I recommend it, yeah.
And just to give a quick idea for the listeners, if they're interested in the book, you know, a couple of the other stories. I really love Juan and Lucia, and Juan is an older gentleman who's starting to lose his eyesight, and all he knows is kind of just working, you know, farm work, laboring type work. And Lucia is the little daughter of one of his neighbors. She brings him some empanadas one day, just off her own bat. Her mom didn't tell her to do it. And then they develop this kind of friendship, and he's giving her some moral advice about dating guys when she goes off to college, but that, you know, and she's kind of helping him out when she's there. And they just develop this really nice intergenerational connection. So some of the stories are nice, and I want to just point out, you know, they're not all crime sort of stories or something like that. You know, some of them are, you know, we do have there's the likes of the cut nose woman. That one really got me thinking. This, it's a short one, but the woman's just wondering why has the white man arrested my husband? You know, sure, he beat me and he cut my nose, but you know, I was cheating on him with my lover, and that's just our way. That's what we do. He's a great warrior. He shouldn't be in the white man's jail. And she's trying to, it's this kind of cultural difference, or this trying to figure out, you know, why have they imposed this system on us? But of course, we're thinking, well, he beat you and that's a crime, so that's why he's gone to jail. So it's quite interesting to, some of them make you think, which I like, you know?
Yeah.
I'm glad you loved it. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it's interesting that, you know, we just take everything expected, Western values, and imposing our Western values on everyone. It's interesting to reflect upon that, because there really aren't enough stories about that, or even discussions about just what is right, what is wrong. It's really a flexible cultural thing. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you like that. That one and the other short story about Chapo, the other Apache, it takes place in Arizona, and they're actually part and parcel of the sequel to Real Sonora, because in Real Sonora, the Arizona Ranger He hooks up with several different people throughout the story, but he hooks up with the Indian policeman in that short story, plays a larger part in Rio Sonora and, of course, in the sequel. But it's I was always interested in the mixture of the cultures, especially from a law enforcement perspective, mm-hmm. where we now these people, even though they have their own culture and their own land, so to speak, on the reservation, they're all subject to the laws that we pass we pass when we conquered Arizona territory, so to speak. And then then I venture into Mexico as well, where he works with another law enforcement group down there called the Mexican Rurales. So I like what you saw there. You grasp the interest in the mixing of the cultures, some good, some bad, but it's a fact of life.
And just to wrap it up, and we also have, you know, for example, there's a story about a girl who escapes. She's kind of working in a sex joint, a brothel type place, and she escapes from Domingo, who's running the place, and, you know, beats him over the head and makes off with some money, and then befriends a priest to try to get a bit of protection on her journey. We have people, you know, defending against bullies and things like that as well. There's a chap who's been bullying the other kids, and one guy kind of sticks up for them in the end, and he's kind of proud of that when he gets in trouble for it. He says, "No, I, you know," he thinks that he did the right thing. So there's some moral lessons to be learned in some of the stories, but I'm not going to say any more. I'm going to let people, look at it for themselves. So it's Jay Reader, Archuleta, The Best Good Horse, and Other Short Stories. And I recommend that, you know, if people think it sounds interesting, go ahead and give it a go. Would you like to plug your website or, you know, plug anything before we let you go?
Yeah, I don't have a website. I would be absolutely horrible at it. I'm not going to waste my time or anybody else's time. The books, of course, can be had through the publisher Izzard Inc., Izzard Inc. Publishing. They're on Amazon. Some of the other online bookstores, so you can get them.
You can get online anyway.
A hard copy or ebook. So
awesome. Well, guys, you can get it on Amazon and things like that. Awesome. So the last question I want to ask you before we let you go that we ask to every author then is, if there's any existing book that you wish you'd been the person to write, what would it be?
Or short story, maybe as well.
Oh, and story works too.
Yeah. I'll compromise with you and I'll go with a novella. It's going to be Of Mice and Men by John Steinbeck. That to me, it struck close to home because his characters, the plot, the dialogue, the action was so close to my heart because that's kind of the way I grew up. So that'd have to be it. I love the way he had the economy of words, but told a very, very good story in about 120 pages or so.
That's something we talk about a lot. Usually in a novella, you can accomplish exactly the same as you can accomplish in a massive novel. You know, some of these writers love to just really go overboard sometimes, and it's not always quality.
we call it the Anna Karenina method. If they do just write a short story and then 600-page agricultural manual.
Had it out, you know.
Right. If 10 words is good, then 100 words has got to be better, right?
Yeah. Right. That's what they think.
That's it. Well, thank you so much for calling to the show.
Yeah, thanks.
Taking the time to speak with us about your stories, which we absolutely loved, by the way. And
thanks. And we will be delighted to read more if you feel like sending us more, because that's we'd always be happy to. Thanks so much. And enjoy John Williams' Butcher's Crossing. Or any of his works.
I will. Thank you for the recommendation, gentlemen. It's been a genuine pleasure.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, PJ, that's a lovely surprise. We always love to have our authors call into the show. Absolutely brilliant. And hopefully everyone will go ahead there, whether it's on Amazon or even just find somewhere online, and pick up the best good horse. Well, that was lovely. Let's move on and talk about what we've been reading ourselves this month. Like, just before we get into it, though, I do want to let people know to head to booksboys.com, where you've got, of course, our website. And there's a special post on there to celebrate our two-year anniversary. And it ties in with this month's sponsor. We're sponsored by the 2022 Tips, where you can find the latest songs by a certain The Dean and PJ Burke. So if you've heard of these... heard of these chaps, we've got a few of our new songs on there, and if you're lucky enough to get the cereal box edition bonus track, you'll hear us sing My Lovely Horse in addition to three tracks each by ourselves.
And that's the usually the Japanese bonus CD version, that extra track, but we're doing not just for the Japanese listeners.
If you have found a cassette tape in a cereal box, you'll get it. But in addition to that,
in Japan,
go to patreon.com/booksboys and you get all our other shows. We've released some more Dark Place Dreamers on there, where Dark Place Robert and I reviewed some The Sandman Netflix show. We haven't done a Playboys yet this month, but there's going to be some released very soon. Alex and I are about to record Much Ado About Nothing, and it might be out around the same time as this episode. Mm-hmm. And PJ and I are going to work on some stuff as well. So there'll be some Playboys. I released a Music Man. I released a little bonus episode where if you want to hear me 10 years ago doing two chavvy dance remixes, but also two 50s rock and roll songs about candy stores, then you can go and go and get those. But that's on our Patreon, guys.
That is the plus 18 section. So make sure that you get permission from your mothers and fathers. That is spicy stuff right there.
So we've both done interesting things this month. You've read a lot of children's books, and I've been time traveling, and I've only read most of my books set in the ancient Greece and Rome and early England. So
it's very kind of different, kind of, you know. So who's going to be listening, the ancient historian or the children author? I suppose the one in the middle, maybe the children author who wants to set his children's stories in Socrates times. This episode is your episode. Let's call it the ancient Greek children's episodes.
I like to think that we're hitting every base, right? Because the only two types of books are children's books and ancient historical books. So we've wrapped everyone in there.
It's very clear and obvious. Everyone's going to listen to this one.
So,
and I don't think we haven't had a bigger list of books we've read. So, so I think overall we've almost got 20 books between of us, but we won't go into depth of all of books, especially all of my children's books, but we'll still give some deep insight.
So we've covered one already, with our lovely interview there. But the first historical book I read is called Yo Julia. For the non-Spanish speakers, that's I Julia.
Yes, I was pointing out to Dean just earlier, not every one of our listeners speaks Spanish. He seemed to take it for just granted and not translating anymore. Just a Spanish translation of the title.
Try to translate these titles. So this is by Santiago Posteguillo, and it's part one of the Julia Domna series. So this
and he's quite famous, right? I've seen his name around a lot. I just haven't read him.
I would say the same. The name felt familiar to me, but I'd never, I'd never read anything by him.
He's a modern author, but he is a contemporary author, isn't he?
Yes, he is. Yeah, this book. So I think I didn't have the exact year, but it's fairly recent. It's about a few years ago.
Yeah. Cool.
So Julia is married to a certain future Roman emperor. He's not emperor at the beginning, Severus, okay? But the emperor is a certain Commodus. Now, Commodus is a bit crazy. He's the emperor, but he's very full of himself. You know, look, these emperors all had very long names, right? Because it's very normal in Roman society, you would have three names, but then the emperors would add Caesar and Augustus, and maybe sometimes they would add one more emperor that they wanted to kind of claim a lineage from So you might end up with six. Yes. This guy's got like 10 at one point. He's got like Herculeus in there and Romanus, and he's just adding like all the, he is Rome, he is Hercules, and all this kind of stuff. And he's
a proper lad.
Yeah, but he's doing the labors of Hercules himself. And there's one part where they say, well, the next labor is to go and kill birds. And the guy says, but mummy, to Julia, says there's no birds to kill. And she says, ah, little son, we are the birds.
Oh, my God, the guy. That's a great line, actually.
So the guy's a bit of a psychopath. Again, look, I've studied some Roman history. I don't know all the emperors in and out. Well, yeah. I'm saying at least this is how the book portrays them, and that's my caveat for all of today's works. I don't want to get any slander or libel lawsuits from Commodus or any other
or his establishment,
figures,
yeah.
Whoever's still running his estate today. No law firms, please. But what happens is there's a chap called Quintus, let's see if I can get his exact name, but he is head of the Praetorian Guard. Quinto Emilio is his name. He's head of the Praetorian Guard, and he realizes things are getting a bit wild with Commodus here. And they know that Severus, who's a governor out in another area, is a threat. So his wife Julia is in Rome, and she's not safe. And at one point, the emperor shoots an arrow at her, and misses her intentionally. But she doesn't even flinch because she's a badass,
Right, yeah.
But there is a bit of underlying fear, like we're not really safe in Rome.
Yeah, but you pretend. You know? I mean, you probably have to. When you're in that high position, you just act strong. Yeah.
So then he renames Rome like Commodus City or something and they just say, okay, this guy's crazy. We gotta.
Sorry, I just want to verify because I've never heard of this. Is this completely fictional or is it based on some historical anecdotes at least?
Yeah, this is all pretty by the numbers, actually. Yeah, pretty
right.
Well,
and you really wanted to change the name or change it for a brief while.
I don't know if that detail is true. I haven't looked into it exactly which bits are true and which bits are false. But I don't think he was a very good emperor, So the Praetorian Guard essentially arrange, they get together and they poison him and they have him killed. But the opening line
of Brutus.
Well, the opening line, the opening line of this book is, or one of the opening lines, I was the enemy of four emperors. So that's one down, So next is Pertinax, and he lasts a very short time because once again, he's dealt with by the head of the Praetorian Guard. So we now have a problem, right? Quinto Emilio is very powerful. He's the kingmaker, right? He's just disposed of two emperors.
What?
And there's a part where, he essentially chooses, who his guard will allow to be emperor. So that can't go on. So, of course, the third emperor kills him, so that's him disposed of. And then enter the secret police of Rome, this kind of fabled, group. There's a lot of interesting things happening, though, but the central story is around Julia. And eventually, Severus sends for her to be with him, gets her to escape from Rome while Pertinax is there. So she escapes and she goes off with him, but she's the master manipulator, or the mistress manipulator,
if
you will. And at one point, he's trying to figure something out, and she says, oh, I've got it all planned since longer ago than you can even imagine. She has, all the chess pieces in place and all this kind of stuff. She knows what's going on. But, of course, there's another contender to the throne whose wife is similar. Uh-huh. And the two wives hate each other because they're both manipulating and scheming. But this lady, she was the daughter of previous kings from an area that Rome took over and made part of the empire. And she said, I will be a queen. My husband and my sons, will be kings or emperors. So she has this long-standing plot to make her husband the emperor, and no matter at any cost. And it gets to the point where he starts to question her love because he's like, you're actually putting me and our kids at a risk. Like, you want to be empress
at any cost.
And
this sounds like it's getting a bit... It sounds like it's getting a bit Game of Thrones-esque. Is this a very violent book as well, and as opposed to sexually?
It is. Now, towards the second half, the violence increases and it's just lots of war scenes, and it loses me a wee bit. I'm not interested in those scenes. But it's good as long as it lasts. And there's there are some graphic scenes as well. There's a girl, I think she's Marcia, she's called, and she's originally Commodus's mistress, but then Quinto saves her and then takes her as his mistress. And then, she's kind of scared because all she's doing is being used as a sex object by whoever is in power at the time for her beauty, right?
Whoa.
So then when the secret police come in, they just, as a gang, brutalize her. And it's really like a tough scene to get through,
Well, it sounds like an accurate depiction, though, of the history of the time, even if it's fictional. Yeah. The story, people seem to kind of make it sound sometimes very innocent and naive, the Greek and Roman times, but especially Roman times. I love the Sienkiewicz novel Quo Vadis, because they're really brutal kind of Roman citizens. And I think that's the more accurate history, isn't it? It's not really that they're just like hanging about. I mean,
yeah,
Julius Caesar, that kind of thing. So even though it might be hard to read, it's probably very, very accurate. It's probably even worse, actually.
It's probably even worse. There's also an old doctor called Galeno, who's very respected, and they take him on board and get him to deliver a message to her husband, and then her husband comes and gets her. But he's like, I don't really want to get involved in politics, but I'll help you in return for access to this special library. You know, it's the library at Alexandria. There's like a special section of books that are prohibited that he wants books. Access to, you know, books. So that's his entire motivation. And then we have some, you know, some slaves and getting involved. And there's a nice moment where Julia is very, very clever. She never forgets. If, you know, she owes you a favor, she'll remember it. Might be a year away, you know, but. And one of her slaves, he works really, really hard and saves up his tips and his money and things. And he says to her, I was planning on using this to buy my freedom, but I would like to use it for you to purchase another slave that I'm in love with. We'll both still be slaves, but I just want to, I'll buy her for you.
Right.
And she kind of realizes, and she said, oh, it's the first time I realized that these slaves also have like emotions, you know. He says, he's a very good slave. I've never had any problems with him. He's never asked for anything before. But this is the first time I've realized that he could be in love with someone and that kind of, and she lets it happen in the end, you know, but she doesn't free them. That maybe was asking too much, but she says, yeah, okay, you can, we'll take that, you know, she can be your wife. But it's really interesting that she then realizes like, okay, so these slaves also are people, you know, she has that little epiphany moment.
Well, yeah, which is obvious for us, but not for the world, really, up to a few years. Up to a few decades ago, or even present moment. Yeah. So
But again, there are difficult graphic scenes where one of the slave girls has a baby, and one of the kind of bandit types just says, "Set your baby in the dirt there. Take your clothes off and follow me." You know. And she's like, "I can't leave my baby rolling around in the dirt." And he's like, "Well, it's either that or I kill you both." So it's pretty. Wow. Pretty hard going, you know, some of the scenes, but let's be honest, those are one or two graphic scenes. The majority of this book is about political intrigue, you know, toppling regimes, toppling emperors, and how does Julia get to be an empress, because that's what she wants. That's the crux of the book. The only bad thing about this, man, is it's like 600-700 pages. I just feel like it would have really benefited from being like 150 pages shorter, you know.
Yeah, okay. So not the Anna Karenina method, but a bit loquacious, a bit of a war kind of portrayal at the end that could have been cut down.
Yeah, I would have taken out some of the war bits, and I know that maybe they're essential or they're historical or whatever, you know, and it's Albinus or Albino is the other guy that wants to be emperor, and he makes a deal with him and he says, you can be my heir, but then he makes his son his heir, so then they go to battle, and I don't really care about the battles, you know, that's the problem.
Yeah. Well, it's with the Lord of the Rings, the book itself, I find it intensely boring, the war depictions, whereas I really like the more philosophical traveling parts. So I feel the same with it's not really my thing, the war depictions. But interesting, but it makes me think that ancient Rome is a very good setting for a thriller, isn't it? Or if you want to write even a crime book, it's actually a very good setting. It's all there. It's more chaotic.
I'm glad you find the ancient world a good setting for a novel, because I have several more. But why don't we hear from Spicy. Some? Why don't we? We'll do a tit for tat. We'll do ancient followed by kids, just to kind of
all right,
switch the mood.
It's like the cucumber sushi between the sushis. It's there to cleanse the palate. Well, the first book I read, and so honestly, I've been reading one book for the past 6 weeks, and then in between that, I've been reading all of these other children books. So, the one book is another philosophical. Yeah, some people will call it self-help, but I prefer self-empowerment. So, like, we were talking about The Way of the White Clouds. So it's a similar vibe. This is Ask and It Is Given, Learning to Manifest Your Desires by Esther and Jerry Hicks, published by Hay House. So Hay House publishes really that kind of novel, which is about essentially reaching your highest potential, but in a more spiritual, philosophical way. And basically, this is something which not many people I think will probably read in the first place. So it's Esther Hicks is a medium. She says she can talk to several spirits, which she collectively calls Abraham. And I carry this book along. I like Wayne Dyer, and he's from Hay House. And he just recommended carry this book along for a few months and just carry along, see if you want to read it. So I actually did. I carried it across.
This is one for the listeners now, maybe, if you're finding you don't have a lot of time in the day. You don't have to read it, just carry it along? Is that what we're doing?
Well, yeah. I carried this book along with me to 5 different countries over the past year, and I got down to sat down and started reading this. And my God, it's really one of the most... one of the most profound books I've ever read, and I still haven't finished it. And similar to the Tao Te Ching, I really recommend that you read slowly and meditate on it. And this was recommended by Alisa, my girlfriend. And
okay,
yeah, it's amazing. Now, you may be very skeptical about the concept that she listens to spirits, which she called Abraham, or not. I know I was, but I don't really question any of it anymore. It's not really, it hasn't become really a relevant thing if there are spirits or if it's just her higher consciousness, you know, just her higher self, and she just separates it. She talks very differently when she's normal. And then when she gets in the state, she talks like this.
PJ, that's not what I was skeptical of. I was skeptical of this concept of reading slowly. I never encountered this before.
Well, I was talking to you about this. I've become slower and slower. You know, I take months sometimes to read a book. You've seen it. But what can I say? This is really one to meditate upon. Basically, the concept is, although I highly recommend you just read it slowly, the concept is that you can, not that you can get anything you want or attract everything you want, but that you are enough. And that you are in the perfect place right now, but that if you let go of all the negative self-criticism that everyone around us does, and of all the negative input that you allow into your brain, say, for example, watching the news, violent news, if you can just pick what goes into your subconscious, and if you can just forgive yourself for what you've done, what you do, and what you will do, essentially... was Abraham call, so the Abraham is plural. So I'm just going to talk about Abraham philosophy. If you stick in well-being, that's in capital letters, you will just do everything and achieve everything that you ever want. And that's it. That's a logical concept. It's just many times repeated in the book. But if you think about it, I think it makes sense. If you feel well doing a certain thing, or being in a certain state, or being with certain people, then that is an indicator that you're doing the right thing, your true self. Yeah, and it's very logical, but really, I think not actually, because we seem to be doing thousand things we don't enjoy. Being with people we don't, it's not that we don't enjoy people, it's not like they don't give us full happiness.
Sure.
So reading this book is indicating that if we want a better world, a better society, a truer, it doesn't really talk about good or bad, just a truer society, then just everyone should focus on doing exactly what they do want. And even if that means laying in bed for a week and reading, well, then you should do it, because eventually you'll probably get out of that bed refreshed and ready to start whatever it is you love. So, I mean, like, just for example for you, so if you're doing this, if you're listening to this book, Sports episode, and it's making you feel good, but you don't need to even describe it. I think we're trying to always describe why does it make, for what purpose. But read this book explains more, just for no purpose. It's just the feeling itself is beneficial and healthy for you. Then this is also practical for you. If it makes you feel good, it will somehow benefit you.
Yeah.
But it made me think of an example specifically, also physically. You know, if you feel physical and ease, is that really the right thing? Is pushing yourself to the maximum really, really the good thing? Because people always think about long-term solutions.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I tend to push myself a lot, for example. But I have a question for you, PJ.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Are we just limiting this to things that make you feel good, you know, mentally or let's say spiritually, if you allow that? Because, you know, I'm guessing this isn't hedonism, right? This isn't saying like just indulge in like physical pleasures and eat a lot of chocolate and, you know, drink alcohol and party. I'm guessing there's a distinction made somewhere.
Well, that's a good ethical question here, right? And or semantic question. So yeah, so essentially, that's it. I did think about this. So it would be like too much chocolate and too much joy and carnal pleasure and sex and other. Would that be good? If you think about it, this is just a practice. It may, and we talked about this in the philosophy classes back in university. It does make you feel good, but if you excess. Two things can happen. You won't feel so good after doing it too much. And second of all, will you feel good after the initial gratification of eating the chocolate? Mm. So you eat the chocolate, you feel really good. But then do you feel good long-term? This is about long-term happiness. That's the distinction. So because I don't think if you eat the chocolate, you won't usually feel good after a certain amount of time.
That's good. That works, yeah.
That's what it talks about. Read the book is that, and I think people will be skeptical about the whole new age kind of approach it takes. But I think just take your skepticism apart. And I think this is really, in the end, very, very like basic kind of stuff. Really logical in the end, even though she says they're spirits. Okay. And but I kind of believe that it's spirits. I just wouldn't necessarily call it like an external spirit. It's just her kind of like, she just kind of, I kind of imagine she just kind of lets the barriers loose in her brain and just lets it flow. I can kind of understand that, but at the same time, it's not really understandable. But yeah, just think that's all I want to say about the book. This did become a big thing in The Secret, but I have not read or seen The Secret. It doesn't really attract me for some reason. I like this more grounding.
Yeah, The Secret I'm not too keen on myself.
I haven't read it, so I don't want to, but I just don't feel attracted to that kind of concept. This is, for me, a lot more grounding, even though The Secret author was very influenced by this. And it does make me what I'm saying is I do meditate on this because I do try to be very aware right now what makes me feel good physically, mentally, long term. And there are some things, which some habits, which I'm just, which I'm just maybe doing more of or doing less of. So it is helping me a lot.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm actually stopping to do, you know, this might seem very responsible, but I'm kind of like doing less of the bureaucratic stuff or things that people say you really have to do right now. Whereas I kind of feel like, yeah, it's making me feel really bad right now for some reason. So maybe I'll just do it in my own pace, slower. Because this book would just indicate you just do it slower when you feel good, mm-hmm. rather than like, oh, right, I have to do now 10,000 pieces of paperwork.
Yeah. That's fair.
So if you're struggling with this issue in life, I really recommend this book. But I really recommend this book to anyone. Children's book. It's not a children's book, but I recommend for children to read it. So there you go. There's another one for your children.
Okay.
By Esther and Jerry Hicks, published in Hay House, which I also want to recommend, just Hay House Publishing in general. Mm-hmm. Ask and it is given.
But I guess that's not a children's book as such, but your other books are children's books. Am I right?
Exactly, yes. So I'll briefly mention one. The first children's book I read was really for teenagers. It's the only one for teenagers. The other ones are for younger ones. I'm trying to do chronology. No, the first one was for very little kids, and it's Eric Carle's Where Are You Going? To See My Friend. This is the author from The Very Hungry Caterpillar. Have you ever read The Very
Hungry Caterpillar? I have heard rumors about the fabled Hungry Caterpillar.
So classic, this is classic 60s children's literature. But Eric Carle, this is great. Just briefly explain why it's great. Eric Carle wrote and drew Where Are You Going? To See My Friend. Very basic story. They're just animals meet, one animal meets another animal, meets another animal, and slowly they go and see their friend. But why this is genius is because it's the English and Japanese edition. And Japanese reading is starting from behind and starting from the back, going to front. So what happens is you've got both stories, they're same, one in English and Japanese, but they're drawn by different authors. The first one is the original Eric Carle. It does kind of a pastiche, kind of slightly Picasso-esque style drawing.
Sorry, one second. So they've got the English and Japanese. Do they meet in the middle?
Yes, that's the genius. I loved it. They meet in the middle. It's the same story. And then they meet in the middle and you've got a unique fold-up two-page where the Japanese, more animated-looking characters meet up with the pastiche Western characters. And then you're just, where are you going to see my friends? And they sing a song both in Japanese and English.
What if we do half of the book in English and then the other half in Japanese, so you need to be fluent in both languages or you only get half the story? Can we do that?
That's... Well, I love that. I love that. But you see, that's what I did. I was reading. I just want to mention again Alisa, because I was reading most of these books out to Alisa. So I really did read the English one first, then the Japanese one I read in Japanese and translated to her, but really it's the same text. And then you meet in the middle, but the middle, you really do have to speak English and Japanese, because the texts all of a sudden combine and the song has Ooh. Both Japanese characters and English. So really it's a linguist's dream, and I was, you know, it's very
basic. I love it.
I'm lucky to be able to read Japanese, but not really adult stuff. So this was perfect for me. And I wasn't expecting the concept. I didn't know there was going to meet in the middle. I just thought, okay, just the same kind of book, different drawings. But then actually to have a unique page which opens up, so it's twice as big, was all the characters. So the animated Japanese kind of S characters and Eric Carle's characters all meeting up to see their friends.
I like that a lot, actually.
I thought that was genius, and they've got a unique song in Japanese English. So really, this is also just for the linguist out there, a site for source, and really affordable price in Amazon, by the way. So it's, I thought it was more rare, but it's not. It seems to be quite okay. Yeah, you can get it.
Well, just before I take us back to ancient times, if you've got a spare 45 seconds, I'm going to go ahead and play a little ad for our Patreon that everyone can go and enjoy.
Go ahead, Cowboy.
The facts that will be presented are true.
It's PJ.
Hello there.
Dean, as always, joined by Mireia. Say hello.
Hello.
Dark Place Robert and Playboy Alex.
Doing all right. Glad to be here again.
So I've given you those nicknames. I'm not a fan of that one. Well, that's where people will know you from. That's
why you're going to know me from that one. Let's carry on anyway.
Hello there. Can you hear me?
Join us for Shakespeare written, Spanish plays and poetry, rock star interviews, film reviews, Dark Place Dreamers, and more. Patreon.com/booksboys. Get it, buy it, books. So.
Wow, that guitar is out of control. I love that idea.
And that's thanks to Trapdoor and Wiggly for the backing music. The next book I read, don't be mad, I read a book called Asesinato en el Jardín de Sócrates. So this is, murder, assassination, if you will, murder or killing in the garden of Socrates. But then I noticed the author's name is Sasha Berst. This is a German author, PJ.
What?
Now, once again, I've read a German book translated into Spanish, and you're going to say, well, English would have probably been closer.
Yeah, yeah.
This book does not exist in English.
Oh, really? It doesn't exist in English?
I can't find it.
Wow. No, I'm always very fascinated by, you know, books that haven't been published into English. So you have to kind of, that's another story.
But, it has been, it's rare, you know. Now, this
if
is
it has, it's probably another. It's probably a complete different title.
Yeah, Spanish right.
Love the title of it. Anyway,
they do.
Now, who's the author? That's more important. Who's the author? So get
Sasha Berst, and this is 2008. Okay. And just I looked it up as well. The Yo Julia was 2018. Okay, just to, if anyone's interested. And he's written a lot of edge books, but this one's interesting. I liked this one, but a little bit less than the previous book, okay? I think that it's written a little bit less well. Now, that might be a translation issue, you know, the Spanish seemed a bit simpler or whatever.
Maybe in English you would have liked it more. Yeah.
Maybe. And I mean, this is set in ancient Greece, and sometimes we're talking about Greek things and using a few Greek words, and then we're obviously translating the book into German and then into Spanish and then in my mind into English. So, like, it might be that it seems not well written just because it's going through four languages, you know?
Lost in translation, yeah, okay.
But, like, and again, it's about 500, 550 pages. Just like the last one, wow. I would have thought maybe knock 100 pages off and it would have been better. I feel like it just goes on a little bit too much, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I find that a lot. But look, it is what it is. I'll give you a quick 5-minute synopsis of the book because I did enjoy it, okay? So we start out, it's a murder mystery, the first half, okay? So surprisingly, it's a murder mystery. There's been a killing. It's called In the Garden of Socrates, really for no reason, but Socrates is in the book and, you know, some of these people are, you know, you meet some of his followers and things, but it struck me as an unusual title. Socrates is not the main character or anything like that.
Right,
being a murderer, I think
it's disappointing because you're a big fan of him, so you were that's maybe a reason why I liked it a bit less.
Maybe I think the guy's called Peliandros, something like that, but anyway, he's dead. So some chap is dead, and our main character has to go along, and he's the head of the archers, which are kind of being used as a police almost, you know, and he's got to figure out who did this murder. And he goes around, he chats to some people, and he chats to Socrates, and at one point Socrates says, you know, there's a few people, there's someone who's really sad about all of this. And he says, well, who's that? Yeah, Periandros, the guy's name, he's dead. He says, well, who is it who's sad about this? He says, a friend of mine, he's called Glaucon. He says, I don't know him. He says, well, Glaucon doesn't really use his real name. You might know him by his nickname, Platon.
Oh!
So we meet the illustrious Plato.
Oh, Lord.
Now, for some reason, the author chooses to give Plato a stutter, and I don't know why. And he actually says in the notes at the back, I just don't know why I did that. It's just a bit of fun, you know. So I don't know why that is.
Well, I like that kind of
So, and there's a list of like historical inaccuracies listed on the back. You know, things that were to make the book a work of fiction, to drive a story that weren't accurate. That's all listed and chronicled accurately in the back of the book.
Nice. By the way, I was listening. I just briefly looked up who this author is. He is he's a German Italian author, and he wrote Mortem, Gaten, and Socrates. So it's literally the same thing, Murder in the Garden of Socrates. So the title is very accurate, published in Frankfurt in 2008. And yeah, you seem to be right. It doesn't seem to be an English translation.
Yeah, I couldn't. Because I looked for one, you know? But they talk about Socrates going around and asking people, you know, what is truth? What is virtue? And we get a little bit of an insight into people thinking that some people really respect him and follow him, and others think he's a bit of a crazy old guy, you know? But our main character talks to him a few times to try to guide him towards his investigation, you know? But the opening line of this book, we are in Athens in the time of Alcibiades. Love Alcibiades. He is
a
fantastic character and a former pupil of Socrates. Now, I didn't remember that Alcibiades was ever a governor as such. But he was an influential character. He was a kind of super strategoi, a super general strategos. And he did have a lot of power, sort of, I thought, unofficially. But he, just to give you a quick idea, Alcibiades is this guy who was working with Athens. He got in trouble, went off to Sparta, helped the Spartans against the Athenians, had sex with the queen in Sparta, got kicked out of Sparta, went to Persia, helped the Persians against the Athenians and the Spartans, got in trouble in Persia, went back to Athens, became a super general, helped the Athenians against the Persians and Spartans, then like slept in one day when they were meant to go to war and got sacked.
Oh, right.
It's ridiculous. But he's a very influential character. He also got exiled for like being involved in making fun of some of the religious mysteries, and potentially was implicated in cutting off parts of the Hermes, the penis from the Hermes statues, and this kind of thing. So he's a bit of a
charming fellow.
But he was a former pupil of Socrates, as was Critias. And Critias becomes one of the 30 tyrants. So already we've got two characters who aren't doing well, who are both former pupils of Socrates. And that's one of the reasons why Socrates was killed for misleading the youth, even though that wasn't a crime in Athenian
law. Yeah, I get it. Interesting.
So, but the problem is, we start with this murder mystery, and it's nice and it's fun, and we're gathering up a couple of clues, but if I'm being honest, not a lot is really happening for like a large portion of it.
That's a bit.
You know, there's a steamy sex scene with his wife at one point, if you're interested in that. But
Socrates and his wife?
No, with our main character, with his wife Aspasia.
Okay.
And, but one of the main...
That would have been pretty groundbreaking. Socrates and his wife.
One of the main things that happens is there's this treatise that someone has written about... I think it's based on a real treatise by the old oligarch, Constitution of Athens. Yeah. But it's hard to read because it's in ancient Greek in this novel. There's a thing criticizing democracy and in favor of oligarchy. And then, of course, the tyrants come to power, and off goes Alcibiades and Critias and his friends come in and start killing a lot of people. And it is believed that Critias wrote this pamphlet, and this is one of the main clues. So there's just this murder mystery. I'm not really going to spoil, you know, how it goes. There's a bit where they find a ring and they go to a jeweler to investigate. And, you know, it's clue following. It's what you're used to. One of the best bits in this book is the reveals. So I told you about the Plato reveal. There's a bit at the very, very end. It's not a spoiler. Where almost the last line of the book, he just says, oh, I should mention to you that my nephew is doing quite well. And he's following Plato and he's very interested in philosophy. He's a young chap called Aristotle. You know, so
I knew it, yeah.
Yeah, they throw those in. And there's also a bit where he says to someone, oh, you're reading a book at the moment, are you? He's like, yeah, I'm reading it's a little book called The Peloponnesian War by a chap called Thucydides. So they keep throwing in
just
these
like,
little bits.
Just by a chap called, like, you know, just like someone who just wrote it recently. Like.
Yeah, but I love the casualness of it as well, because I suppose at the time it would have been, you know?
Yeah, it just would have been, yeah.
And we meet, if you go and listen to Forensic Friends on our Patreon, you'll see that I've covered some court speeches, and we meet the great court speech writer, the logographer Lysias, and he helps out at one point. So I like that we're hitting all the things that I like, you know?
Yeah.
Where, and Alcibiades and Socrates and everything, where they lose me is the second half of the book. All of a sudden, they skip ahead like 4 years, and the second half becomes essentially a summary of Thucydides, the history of the Peloponnesian War. And and then at the end, they try to tie in the murder mystery again. But
nah,
it's a bit, why did they do that, you know?
Yeah, that's a pity.
It kind of loses me when we just start doing political summary, because I've read Thucydides. I don't need that. I wanted the murder mystery, you know? And it's weird. And he convinces Critias, but then we wonder, what was it or not? Critias is a bad guy, but this guy is maybe blaming him for things he didn't do.
It reminds me of another male German author, Bernhard Schlink, who wrote The Reader. I haven't seen the film, but the book is really three parts. It's a love story. And then it's really law philosophy, the second part. It's really specific law philosophy. And then it kind of tries to tie in at the end. Now, I must say, I still love the novel, but I thought, does it have to be so dense in the law philosophy? Because he is a law philosophy teacher, Bernhard Schlink. But can you not sometimes, I just feel like, can you not sometimes separate the novelist from the lecturer? And I find sometimes, I don't know.
Yeah.
Sometimes
we end up covering, you know, the Athens Maritime Empire and their sort of Sparta, you know, and the battle that they won, and that was Marathon, I can't remember. And then, you know, saying, well, Athens, you've got to give up your empire and your allies are going to become Sparta's allies. And it's just, it's almost a Wikipedia or, you know, at some point.
Yeah.
I don't know why we get to that when it was really good. It's also not the best written, as I say. Like, Plato doesn't really do a lot in it. And even Socrates isn't.
Even though Plato understood her, he sounded like a great character.
It's great characters. It's a great book. But then it doesn't really go anywhere. You know, that's the problem.
Especially such a length, like 600 pages. It doesn't sound like it's worth my time.
But it is enjoyable, particularly the first half. I'm struggling on whether to recommend it or not. That's it. I've never read a book that I'm so on the fence about, to be honest.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough,
I mean, I can't recommend it to the listeners because you can't even get it in English. So that's...
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.